Mike Podcast, Mental Health for the Culture.
We address real life topics and brainstorm real solutions.
This podcast is meant to be informational and not to serve as a personal counseling session. If you feel that you have some mental health issues that need to be addressed, please find a counselor near you.
Hey, Nedra.
Hey, Kendra T.
How are you doing?
I'm well. Summer's almost over.
It is. You've been out here doing it big, living your best life and everything.
And you too.
A little bit. I've been in the house a lot this summer, but, you know, hey. It's been a great, productive, yet chill summer. A nice little balance for me.
Ain't nothing wrong with chilling.
Mm-hmm. All right, so just to remind everyone, we have changed the format of our show. We are now doing monthly shows, and it's a little bit longer and broken up into a few different segments. So let's get started with the first segment in the news. And we were just discussing how Nedra does not watch the news.
And it's very freeing. Yesterday, I went to a barbecue, and this couple came up to me, and they started talking about politics. And I was like, let me stop you right there. I don't watch the news. I don't know any of what you're talking about. And so it was a good segue for me to just talk about some other stuff and just slowly walk away from the conversation.
I was going to say, it sounds like a nice way to escape a conversation you don't want to be in with maybe people you don't want to be in it with.
That too. I'm like, I don't know anything about what you're talking about. I feel like an idiot. So,
No,
I really don't. Like, I feel so relaxed, like, not knowing. It's like, if something happened, I'd be out of the loop, and it would be a surprise, and I'm okay with it.
Well, but you do take the news in your own way. I mean, you get pop culture news.
I'm about pop culture news.
Right? Hence our podcast.
Mental health news. Like, yeah, but I search it out. Like, I literally will put in a search engine, like, mental health.
Oh,
what's going on in the city? Like, I'm very particular. I just don't want it, like, thrown at me. I want to pick it.
Okay. That's a nice way to say that. All right, so let's get started with some news. In this last month, we have experienced the death of an icon, Aretha Franklin. She is from Detroit, as we both are.
Yes.
Yeah, so, you know, Aretha Franklin did live a nice, I won't say nice, but she did live a long life with a lot of accomplishments and music and activism and I think philanthropy as well, especially around Detroit, Detroit area. So, what's your favorite Aretha Franklin song?
Oh, I don't know.
Okay, I have a couple.
Well, you tell me your favorites, and maybe I'll pick one of those.
Right, exactly. Just co-sign it.
Okay.
So, first off, there is a great Aretha Franklin Greatest Hits album. She has a couple of them out there, but the one with the red cover of her in her younger years, like maybe in the 50s or the 60s. So it's a black and white photo on a red cover. Anyway, that has all of her best hits, all of her most well-known. So my favorite are Ain't No Way.
I was thinking Ain't No Way.
Yeah, that's a good soulful one. Ain't No Way. And also like Say a Little Prayer.
I think those two are good.
Yeah,
great. I was thinking Ain't No Way when you asked me my favorite. So maybe I'll go with that as my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So a couple of facts about Aretha Franklin. She did get started at about 14, singing in the church. Her dad is a very well-known preacher, C.L. Franklin, from Memphis. That's where she was born, and that's where he started off in his preaching. Then Buffalo, New York, and then Detroit. Her mom, they divorced early when she was young, and so that was kind of a turbulent divorce, and her mom was in and out of her life, not by her own choosing, just because politics with the family or whatever, but she died young of a heart attack.
Her mom?
Yeah, at 36.
That is young.
Suspicious. Because one place says a heart attack, yet my Detroit insiders say car wreck. So
who are your Detroit, your aunties and uncles? They always got some theories about something. Like, you know what really happened? You're like, no, tell me.
Right. Well, you know, she's like, I remember reading this in the newspaper and seeing them on the Color of People magazine. But Aretha Franklin, she had four kids. She had two very young. I mean, she had all four kids knocked out by 30, the age of 30.
Aretha Franklin or her mom?
Aretha Franklin.
Oh, she had kids?
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't know anything else about her until recently, but yeah, I was
she had
Wikipedia-ing
kids.
Her. Yes.
Oh, Wikipedia. That'll tell you everything you need to know.
I know everything that somebody else said. But, yeah, she had two kids at 12 and 13 years old. Then another one at 20 and another one at 20-something. I don't know. But, yeah, and she was married to Colonel Taylor from A Different World.
Was she?
Yes.
You got all the facts.
I got
that is so funny.
60. And how, my
are
insiders.
Are any of those kids his?
No. Okay. Her 12 and her first two kids when she was 12 and 13 are by two reportedly young boys about the same age as her, 12 mm-hmm. and 13. Then she was married in an abusive relationship at 19, so that kid is from that guy. And then the last one is from her road manager. So...
Wait
four
a minute.
Baby
she had
daddies.
A kid when she was 12?
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
I was wondering why you didn't respond to that more.
You know what? I didn't process it until now. She was 12 years old.
She was 12 years old down in Memphis when she had one child, and then around her after her 13.
Now wonder she was such a soulful singer. She lived
she
a whole
lived.
Life by
she
the
did.
Time she was 25.
She did. Okay, here's a little bit more tea. So her dad and mom were, you know, married, and then they had one kid and then another and then Aretha, right?
Mm-hmm.
At the
Did
same,
you say Aretha?
Aretha.
Okay.
Right. So Aretha's number three out of four. Now, at the same time that her mom is having her second baby, dad is having some other babies over here with a 12-year-old.
Oh.
And then she had another one by the time she was 13.
Wait a minute. Did Wikipedia say this?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yes. My Detroit Insider confirmed.
Does she have an autobiography? I need to read that.
I know, right? Well, you know the movie is, they're working on a movie. She,
really?
Yeah, the movie, I don't know where it is in production, but there is a movie in production in some stage, and she handpicked Jennifer Hudson to play her.
Wow.
So this was when I heard of it months ago, maybe a year ago. So I don't know where that is. Maybe next year coming out, but that's her autobiography. Now, how honest is going to be? You don't know, because she was involved with it until she died.
Mm-hmm.
And so you never know. You know, when a biography is all authorized with the family, you don't really get all the dirt until you get an unauthorized biography.
And then you combine the two.
Yeah, and then you get some stuff. But yeah, so her dad got a 12-year-old pregnant and then that same girl at 13 pregnant. So that's coincidental, I think. Very interesting.
Maybe that was a part of the culture at that time. Just like 12, 13, you was ripe for the picking.
A rest in power, as our friends at Power and One say, to Aretha Franklin. And then also a couple of things have happened. Jay-Z and Beyonce are on their On the Run tour in Atlanta last night. They were attacked as they were getting off the stage. You know, they do their hand-holding thing, and they exit the stage, and there's music playing. Apes was playing, right? And then all of a sudden, you just see this commotion, and then the dancers are kind of running towards the back of the stage, like the offstage area.
Mm-hmm.
And then one of the dancers, she looks like, oh, my God! Like in shock and everything, and then you see the male
Kendra
dancers.
Is showing a shock face.
Yeah,
you guys
saying,
can't see this.
And then the male dancers are like running towards the back and a whole big thing. So it turns out there was a fan who somehow made his way back there, and he attacked Jay-Z. He like tried to punch him in the eye and stuff.
Oh, because he cheated
on Beyonce?
Because
he cheated on Beyonce.
Oh my gosh. This is such.
Yes.
Oh, I need to watch. I need to find this culture.
Right. I was going to try to. The Shade Room.
Oh,
the Shade Room.
Them.
And I get all my Beyonce.
No, because then they post some stuff I don't like.
They
I won't
do.
Follow them.
Well, I get my Beyonce tea from the Prince of the Beehive. I am at Darion Jordan. Or at I Am Darion Jordan.
Oh, my God.
So, like, his
so
video was the one I saw.
So, this reminds me of a Low Down Dirty Shame. Do you remember when
Jada Pinkett saw
Jada Pinkett saw the soap star she had always been watching, and
mm-hmm.
he was, like, cheating on somebody on the
uh-huh.
soaps. And she was like, Lance from As the Heart Turns.
Yes, soap
she
opera
punched
name.
Him in the eye.
Yeah. How dare you do Donna like that? That's my girl. Yes. That is an example of not having boundaries.
Oh, my gosh. No boundaries.
No.
Like, you so do not know Beyonce. And clearly Beyonce is over.
Breaking the fourth
like
wall.
She's,
right. They holding hands
they
right now.
They holding hands walking out. Like, he probably had to sit in his feelings last night about that. Like, wow.
He had to. I can't believe he did this to her.
Right.
And now got her on tour acting happy about it. I don't know, but...
I have heard people be very upset about Jay-Z's presence
at
this concert.
Yeah. Like he shouldn't be present at a concert or in her life.
Oh, my God. You want them to be married with these three kids, please.
Right.
Please.
I'm into...
Where? You talk about some things that you're into right now. Nedra, what are you into?
Okay, so while on vacation, I'm flipping through channels. Found Dr. Pimple Popper. Oh my gosh, this show is so interesting. Like, I'm not even, like, I've seen a lot of people, like, talk about it, like, as a good thing. So, this show, this dermatologist, I think she's a dermatologist, she's, like, popping and cutting off these abnormal size growth on people's bodies.
Wow.
But the interesting piece is, like, you get so drawn into whether she could, like, this lady had a hump on her shoulder. It was like a whole hump. And she would wear sweatshirts and like cover it up. Stop laughing.
No, I'm sorry. I'm not laughing at the lady. I'm laughing at your description of the lady.
My
she got a
gesture.
Hump, a whole hump.
It was like a hump on her shoulder.
Sorry, no disrespect to the lady.
And she like cut this hump off. She's like, oh yeah, this is like a cyst. And she cuts it off and you're just like, oh my gosh. So these before and afters, like this guy had like 100 or so boils on his chest, and she was just like cutting them out. It's gross to watch, but it's so exciting to see the finished product. It's like, oh my gosh, she did it. And I think I sat there and watched it for like an hour and a half. It must have been some marathon. And I'm like,
well, what channel was it on?
Does I think it's like on? TLC, but it was
oh,
so
yeah.
interesting. I
they
couldn't
love
even turn.
Marathons.
I'm like, what's gonna happen next? Now, I haven't turned it on since then, but that hour and a half was well spent. So that's a really good show. I just remembered it, so I might actually go turn it on.
Yeah.
The other thing, Black Klansman.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I went to see this the other day, and it was really good. I mean, I'm a Spike Lee lover, so I love his movies. I like to mentally dissect them and process them and digest them. I love
it. Exactly what he would want you to do.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it takes a few days to kind of let everything get in there and sort through it, but I really like Black Klansman. I thought... John David, who prefers not to be noticed as Denzel's son, but John David.
Washington.
John David did a very good job. Very interesting story about, you know, how this black guy basically got into the KKK by tricking these folks. And, you know, this was like it took place in the 60s. So he called and he put on his best shifting voice. And he was able to, you know, talk his way into the KKK, and it's very interesting, just that whole process of him being able to, you know, integrate, and, you know, how he was a police officer and how they were able to, you know, stop some things. It's really good. It's really good. It shows a lot about how other black people were very against him being a police officer. Like, he wasn't a part of the movement.
Selling out.
He was a sellout because he was a police officer, and a lot of his time was spent like, hey, I'm still one of y'all, but I also want to do this. And, you know, so it was very interesting just to see that dynamic of someone who is black, who is also part of, I'm doing air quotes, the establishment. And just how he was able to merge those two and be true to himself and still true to his community. It was a good movie. Check it out. I'm sure it ain't gonna last long. It might not even be here in September.
Nah.
You know how those independent films do. So
Is Spike Lee independent though?
Some of his movies are. I don't know if this one was
independent
mainstream.
Level.
I think it depends.
Okay.
Some of them are, though, yeah.
So, and for the maybe one or two listeners out there, the KKK is the Ku Klux Klan, and it was a racially motivated, hate-motivated...
Organization.
That has long been oppressive and repressive to black people, civil rights, everybody,
Jewish
actually.
People,
right, not just black people.
LGBTQI+ people.
Yep. Women, kind of. I mean...
Women.
And then historically, I mean, they've been around for at least 100 years on the public record, maybe longer than that. But so that movie is about him infiltrating the KKK in the 60s?
In the
60s. They're still around today.
Mm-hmm. And they touched on that. They did a little bit of footage at the end with, was Charlottesville?
Oh, yeah.
They did a little Charlottesville
Right, because they fashioned themselves as, like, new... KKK.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. Anything else you're into?
Insecure is back, I'm watching Insecure. I really like it so far. It's only been two episodes, but this season they supposed to be on Know Better, Do Better.
So. Oh, right. I got that from the first episode.
So we'll see how that goes. You know, we'll see if they are actually applying all of those things they've learned thus far in the series and being better people in their dating relationships. We'll see. Love Is.
Now, you did a really good post about Love Is.
Love Is was really good. Love story about a woman who is professional and she has her ducks in a row. She owns a house and she ends up, you know, meeting the love of her life when he was not in a great position. You know, he was basically homeless and without a job and, you know, away from his kid. They were both in Hollywood trying to live their dream and, you know, she was able to do it, you know, and he was still trying to get there. And so it's their love story and It was very engaging and interesting. I'm looking forward to seeing season two. I did not like the finale.
And that is based on the true story of the writer-producers Mara Brock Akil and Salim Akil.
Correct.
The team, the dream team, who brought us Girlfriends and Black Lightning that I discussed in our last episode.
Okay. So, yeah, I think Love Is was really good. Mm-hmm. Definitely go back and watch it. A lot of people will talk about it. Yep, and I put a long post, not super long, but long post up on Instagram.
I mean, you broke it down, though.
I broke it down from a therapeutic interpretation.
Mm-hmm. From a relationship counselor,
yes. Because a lot of the commentary I heard, it was just very interesting around this dynamic of, well, he's broke. She shouldn't date him.
Right.
And I'm like, well, you know, he spends some game, though. Like, he's, you know, he's all about that love language. Mm-hmm. He like, hey, beautiful, you can wear whatever you want to wear to work. You don't need, like, you don't need the approval. Mm-hmm. He's, like, cooking for her every day. And, you know, he was all up in them love languages. And I think that was something that she didn't get from her other relationships. She had dated guys who were, you know, as successful or even maybe more successful than her, but they weren't able to pour into her in the way that she really needed. And once that happened, she was like, oh my gosh, what is this? Take my car, just drop me off at work.
Take my money, my house and my car.
Really, it was like, you know, just do what you need to do and pick me up.
For a hit of you.
Yeah, okay, no.
Little Jodeci for y'all.
Okay. But yeah, it was a whole situation. I say watch it. You haven't watched it yet?
Well, like I said, the way my TV is set up.
Okay.
I'm going to have to get access to
it's
that.
It's not on YouTube? No, I don't know.
Okay. It comes on BET, and they don't put their shows
it's
on Hulu.
It's not on BET.
So.
It's on
OWN. OWN puts their shows on Hulu sometimes.
OWN has an app. That's how I watch it, OWN app.
I have to get access to that. I think I might be able to get access to that. But, yeah.
The Fed's going to listen to this and catch you. You better stop.
What? What do you mean?
I have to
access. Like, began my cable subscription any day now.
Okay. Okay.
What else could I be? What?
Are you? All right.
Jeez. Okay. And then really quickly, what I'm into is the show 911. It comes on Fox or one of those network television stations. And it is a great show. If you've probably seen promos of Angela Bassett on the TV show, this is it. She's a police officer. It's about her story and a firefighter and a 911 operator and just a mixture of their personal lives and their professional lives. So every episode, there are two to three emergencies, some of them really serious. Some of them are just like quirky and zany, like a lady who collect snakes. One day, one of her snakes got a hold of her neck, and she's sitting there getting choked by her python. So she has to call 911, and of course, she can't let them in because she's getting choked by her python. So anyway, like interesting stories.
And this is on?
I think Fox, but one of the like ABC, NBC, Fox, CBS. I think it's Fox or
Fox
maybe
like
ABC.
Ryan Murphy.
They do, and I like a Ryan Murphy show. I like the way it's done, and the acting is great. Every episode,
like
I'm like riveted. Again, the way my television is set up.
Pose is so good.
Cable
That's
channels don't come on
mentioned.
It. So, yeah. I want to get into that, too. I'm going to get access to watch that. FX, right? Pose?
I think so, yeah.
Fox, FX.
Yep.
Yeah. So, yes, that's on my list because I definitely want to see that. But 9-1-1 is a really good show. I like a Ryan Murphy show. Another one that I just finished binge watching is Unreal. It was a show that came on Lifetime, and it was a show about a show, like the backstage behind the scenes of a Bachelor-type show. And it shows how conniving and manipulative, you could even say evil, the producers are and showrunners are of that kind of show because they're doing everything for a story.
What do you watch that on?
Hulu, because it comes on Hulu. And, it's really good. There's a lot of mental illness because one of the main characters has what's described, her mom is a therapist, called her a narcissistic borderline personality disorder, which basically she is a compulsive liar. She's very manipulative. Those two things make her so good at her job as an executive producer of a reality show where she has to, you know, help one suitor find love on this show among all these different potentials, you know. And then, you know, schedule the dates and make everything look good.
So this is a scripted show about...
About a Bachelor-type reality show. A show about a show. But it was really good. So I really enjoyed it.
What did you watch that on again?
Hulu.
Sounds like you watch everything on Hulu.
Kinda. Hulu, Netflix, Amazon Prime, and network television also. And I watch HBO. I have that app.
Yeah, I just started watching Deuce again. I tried to watch it before, episode of Deuce. I'll see how it goes.
Yes, you should. I didn't get into it. Just really quickly, I just listened to Whoopi Goldberg's book. If someone says, "You complete me," run. And it's kind of a relationship book, like Whoopi's big book of relationship advice.
Is she married?
No. But it is more so her advice is coming from a place of do what feels right to you, not what you feel like you should do. Because she has been married because she felt like she should be married. But she's no longer married anymore because she figured, nah, that ain't for me. And, you know, so just those type of things. I mean, you know.
I just wondered, no judgment. Yeah, just wondering, is she married? I like Whoopi. I don't know anything about her personal life.
Right. She has one child, and she's been married 3 times.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And now she does not want to be in a relationship or live with anybody, definitely. So, I mean, she's open to a relationship and love, but it has to be on her very specific terms, which everyone has terms that they want to be in a relationship on, so... It was interesting. I mean, you know.
And what did you listen to that on? I'm asking.
Audible.
Audible. So you bought a subscription?
A temporary one, yes.
Okay. I like Audible.
I do too.
Yeah.
I just don't want to pay, what's the price, $15 a month?
I think it's worth it, though. Like, I used to be against it. Like, I'm not going to buy Audible. But it's so worth it just to be able to complete a book and not have to literally sit there and read it, like, physically.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's worth it.
Yeah, I prefer to get my books from the library, support my local library.
I do that too.
Yes, I know you do. But, you know, sometimes Audible is clutch when you need it. Okay, and on to our topic for the day. Loving someone with depression. That's pretty heavy. One of the sources for this is another show that I've been watching. See, I'm able to sneak this in this segment. It's called You're the Worst. It's another FX show, but I think it comes on FX Online or something. You're the Worst. And it is about two people who are kind of like non-relationship people because of their personal lives and their personalities being, quote, screwed up. But they still have managed to find each other, fall for each other, and then kind of carve out a relationship into that. Early on, one of the characters... she has clinical depression and she has a bout of it. I guess not the manic part. What's like if you were bipolar, like the depressive, the valley, like she hits a low and she has to kind of figure out, should I tell him about this? Like he already doesn't think I'm perfect.
How does her behavior start to change towards him?
She starts sneaking out of the house in the middle of the night. And at first, he's like, what are you doing? Like he notices it. And then he follows her and he finds her parked on a cliff somewhere in her car crying, just crying. And she says, you know, I like to go park in the car and I like to cry. Sometimes I like to just cry myself like a good cry in the middle of the night. Mm-hmm. And so that's a part of her routine. Another thing is Just something weird happened. They were all kind of around the house because he has a roommate, and then she's moved in with him. And so they're all there, and a lot of things are going on, and she starts drinking real heavily and acting kind of weird. And he's like, are you okay? Like, he's, you know, that question's happened a lot. Are you okay? Yeah, I'm fine. Are you okay? Mm-hmm. Are you okay? But really,
you know,
she's trying to...
I wonder, at what point do you tell someone, like, hey, I have depression, and this is how it looks?
I know. She didn't want to tell him because it was a new relationship. She had just moved in. She's like, he already thinks I'm screwed up enough. I don't want to add this to the plate. And her best friend is like, hey, he loves you already, you know, he knows that you're a terrible person. You're not nice. You have issues. And he still loves you. So this one more thing, you got to tell him. So she does go up to him and tells him, you know, I have clinical depression. There's nothing you can do about it. It's something that I just go through. You can't fix me. Don't try to fix me. Just let me ride it out. And I gather that she's saying that because in the past, you know, that has been something she's had to kind of manage with her other relationships, is someone trying to fix her.
Well, I think that's because people don't really understand what it is. They don't understand that it's your thing and not theirs to fix.
Yes.
So I would definitely say, you know, help them to understand what depression looks like for you, because for everybody it is uniquely different. Mm. And I think that, you know, I was just thinking, like, gosh, when do you tell? But I think the best time is to tell people when you feel like this is going to be a serious dating situation, and not waiting too long, because you don't want to surprise people. It's like, you know, if there was something else major you need to tell people, I think you tell them a little more upfront, so it's not like shocking once they get into it.
Right.
Now, of course, not on the first date, maybe not the fifth date. But again, when you find yourself like stepping into that serious territory, that might be a time where you want to disclose, like, you know, and just hey, this is what's going on, and this is what it looks like for me. This is, you know, if this ever comes up, this is the protocol. Like, this is my safety plan. You know, call my mom, call my, if I start doing these behaviors, if I'm just crying, leave me alone, let me have my space. Like, give some folks, you know, some boundaries around how to interact with you when you're depressed, and the things that might be helpful and the things that aren't helpful. I think when people aren't clear about what depression is, it sort of comes across as like this unhappiness that you can get over.
Right.
It's like, and that's, come on, just get outside.
Right, exactly.
Like, and that's I literally can't get outside.
Right.
So...
And that's exactly what he thinks. You know, she says, you can't fix me. Don't try to fix me. I have to just, it's just where I am and who I am right now. He says, all right. Because I think he processed it then as like, okay, she's just feeling a little sad because something had happened. So the next few episodes, like she's one of those like dark personalities, dark humor type of things. So Halloween's coming up. So he plans this whole gory, you know, event thing to go and do. Costumes, like the most terrible, goriest haunted house, killing, murder, all kind of things that she would love. And he's looking all day, he's looking at her like, are you having fun with this? This is great, huh? This is fun. And she's like, yeah, this is fun. He's like, are you having fun now? You love doing this. You look so happy.
So yeah, he's like consumed with her level of happiness.
Right, right.
Like, is she enjoying this? Is this okay? Is she not depressed right now? Is she depressed?
Right.
Like,
and he gets the result he wants at the end of the day, and he says, I knew I could make you happy. I knew I could cheer you up. And she realized that he's been doing all of this secretly just to try to bring her out of a funk, quoting, a funk that he thought she just, you know, just in and could come out of.
So I posted something on Instagram a while ago that said, when people try to cheer you up, but you can't cheer up. Mm-hmm. Like, because people will say, like, just cheer up, you know, but you can't.
It's the same as telling someone, just relax.
Yeah, it's
like you can't.
Oh.
You can't just tell somebody to do it.
That'll do it.
That's all
I'm relaxed now.
Yeah.
You've said relax. It's like, cheer up. You've said it. Now I've got it.
Now
I've got cheer.
I know what to do. Right.
Yeah, it's not that easy. And I think that when people don't have the knowledge about what it is and really understand that it's something, especially if it's chemical, it's not something that you are always in complete control of. Now, there are things you can do, particularly when you're not depressed, to be well, but once you're in that state of depression, it's a lot harder to get out of it. And so when you're in it, it's like, okay, I'm trapped until I'm not trapped anymore. You don't know how long that'll last. And people trying to force you out of it, you know, it can make you feel worse.
Yeah, because I think they take it personally. Like, maybe they are not doing something right.
And then you're disappointing people.
Right.
And you feel bad, like, oh, my gosh, I'm such a disappointment to you because I can't not be depressed.
Right. Yeah. So, and her depression has been going on for the last, I want to say, 4 or 5 episodes. And it's now starting to take its toll on their relationship because, again, he's been taking it kind of personally. Like, I can make you happy. I can help you cheer up. And it's not working. And then he has a whole thing with his family that he wants to talk about. He's like, hey, well, can I just vent about my family? And she said, I just can't. Mm-hmm. Like, she did not have the emotional or physical energy to sit there and listen to him vent about his family that she actually had just sat through. You know, she sat there with them and all their craziness, hiding up under the covers, shrinking down and everything. And she couldn't do it. So he went outside the house and went to a bar and he's talking to someone else now, which, you know, again, that's the toll on their relationship. So, and then another thing that's highlighted, like she does a lot of different substances. Normally she drinks and she smokes cigarette and marijuana. I use the
marijuana cigarette
clinical term.
I'm gonna say weed.
She's smoking pot and cigarettes and drinking. But during this valley of her depressiveness, she is drinking more. She's trying to take things to pick her up. She's snorting coke. She's doing Ritalin. And she's saying none of these things are working, you know?
Because she probably needs to address her mental health, not with narcotics and not with alcohol, but, you know, maybe even some psychotropic medication. I get a lot of folks who are like self-medicating and they're very against psychotropic medications. And I'm like, you're already medicating. And it's not effective because it's not penetrating those points that you actually need penetrated. Like marijuana is just like a general drug. I mean, it can help with your kneecap. It can help with with depression. It can help with a whole bunch of stuff. But man, what if you could take something that is specifically for this one thing? I think you could feel better. And I'm not, you know, I'm not a huge proponent of psychotropic drugs. But I think when you're to the point of self-medicating, you may need some medication. Or you may, you know, and it's not even permanent. I think with depression, it could just be that boost you need to get you out of the bout of depression so therapy can even be effective. Because sometimes with depression, you're so in a slump that everything you're learning to do in therapy, you don't have the motivation to do it.
Right.
And so the medication can help you get to the point of being motivated to actually get up and walk, exercise, drink water, take your vitamin, you know, all of these things that a therapist, you know, engage in positive thinking, gratitude journal, all of these things that could be helpful. You can't be in a slump to start doing those things. Like you're not going to be motivated to actually do those things. So you'll have to, you know, get past that hump of depression. And it could occur naturally, but substances, you know, is typically not the way.
And the character Gretchen, yeah, she has no motivation to put on clothes, to socialize, to go to work. Now, when you said psychotropic drugs, what are some examples of that regular people might recognize?
Zoloft, Paxil, Celexa, those
TV
sorts
commercial
of things.
Drugs.
TV commercial drugs. Okay. Now, again, don't go to your doctor and ask for those. As a matter of fact, don't go to your family doctor, go to a psychiatrist who is specifically trained to help you with psychotropic medications. I do see a lot of folks who will go right to their primary care physician. And I mean, if that's what you know, I understand it, but it's not a permanent fix. Psychiatrists are specifically trained to dispense psychotropic medication. And so going to those folks, you know, you can be put on something, you know, a little more in line with, you know, how you're functioning and not just like a, oh, here, take this general dosage sort of thing.
Right.
Now, I will say with psychiatrists, when you use your insurance, folks have had issues with, like, getting that quick court sort of service. So I say find someone who is probably self-pay and who can give you like a one-on-one specialized experience so you can make sure that you're on the proper dosage and that you're getting the care you need and it's not rushed and all of that sort of stuff.
That sounds like part of a pack light tip.
That is a pack light tip.
But my other question, you mentioned self-medication. What are some of the ways of self-medication that you see people use?
Number one is alcohol.
It's the easiest to get
to.
It can
you
be
could
the cheapest.
You could do it anywhere with anybody. Not at work.
Right.
I mean, if you go out after work, you can do it with other people.
You can still keep a job because you don't get alcohol tested unless you go to work drunk. But
right. But yeah, I would say alcohol is like number one. Marijuana is probably number two.
Mm-hmm.
Cocaine is number three. You know, it's just, it goes, you know, some things get a little more serious, but I would definitely say that alcohol is a drug of choice. I was just watching this Amy Winehouse documentary. And I think her drug of choice, it started off, you know, like she would drink alcohol, she would smoke weed, then she went to like heroin and all this stuff, and then she kicked that stuff and she became a really hard alcoholic, and she died from alcohol poisoning. It was no other drugs.
It wasn't the other drugs.
It was no other drugs in her system. It was like, no, she was bulimic. And she was an alcoholic. And, you know, at the end, she was, like, showing up drunk to shows, couldn't perform. And I think sometimes people minimize the impact that alcohol has on folks. And I think that with depression, particularly with depression, you see a lot of people abusing alcohol.
So did Amy Winehouse, what were her relationships around her? Because when we're talking about loving someone with depression, she had depression. I mean, bulimia and
she was clinically depressed.
Okay.
And she took medication when she was a teenager. But I think the fame, that piece of
that did not help.
That did not help. And I mean, in the documentary, she kept saying, like, I don't want to be famous. What would I do if I was famous? Like, I can't imagine being famous. And when she blew up, she blew up.
On the Back to Black album, that was her second or third album, but that was the one that crossed over here to the United States because she's British. So she mentioned her dad a lot, you know, as being kind of somebody that she clung to
Enabler.
A lot, that loved her. So when we're talking about loving someone with depression, that can be, you know, a romantic relationship, a family relationship, friends, all the people around you who love you. And so enabling kind of goes with that?
No, I don't think
sometimes
you have to.
Okay.
Enabling is all bad, you know. I think when you enable people, you are supporting them or helping to hide the issues that they have. And so some of the things her dad would do in the documentary was he would say, okay, you know, you're getting too sloppy. You got to go to rehab. He would send her to rehab. And then he would say, okay, we got to go to these performances. But he knew that was the thing triggering her.
Mm-hmm.
But he had a financial buy-in.
Right.
You know, they went on vacation. She was clean. She was chilling. He brings cameras like, oh, I'm just shooting a documentary for myself. Don't worry. But they're following Amy Winehouse. He was doing a lot of things that really triggered her. And he knew those things triggered her. But he had a financial buy-in. So it was like he wanted her to be clean, but just like a little bit or something.
Right. Because nobody really wants to see a totally squeaky clean artist who makes mediocre music. And unfortunately, some of these artists make their best music when they're at the bottom, you know.
Right.
When their heart is broken, you know, like Adele and Mary J. Blige, you know, when their heart is broken,
I don't
make
even
their
want Mary J. Blige to
happy.
I don't want to see her happy because her music is best.
No, I'm joking.
No, well,
she should be happy.
But man,
she made
she
the
got
song.
Some good
she
songs
be happy.
When she this last CD, this divorce CD, she's going through this painful
Post-divorce.
Divorce.
Mm-hmm.
She put her heart and soul and all her divorce papers on that CD.
And you know what? I probably fell off the Mary train when she got happy and it was
the dancery.
Dating and married. Yeah, when she dated and married her husband. But when she was with Casey. In that relationship, you got
she was good.
What's the 411 and Mary. I'm going down.
Yep. He was taking her down, too.
Down.
Yep.
Love No Limit. I mean, just,
You do get some good music.
You
and
do.
I,
unfortunately
and I
for them,
that.
But
I definitely hear that. But I think, you know, the thing with Mary J. Blige, she's been clean for many years. Like, right. She's not, you know, she's not abusing substances right. or anything like that. I think with the Amy Winehouse, it's like, she's talking sad and she is sad. You know,
right.
like,
her back to her rehab song was literally about them wanting her to keep
to
going
rehab.
Back to rehab. And she didn't want to go.
And her dad said she didn't have to. That's what she says
yep.
on the song.
She
and
does.
That's what he said in real life. Oh, I don't think you need rehab. You know, she was bulimic and her parents were like, oh, you know, vomiting isn't a big deal. She looked like
oh,
she, you know,
okay.
she definitely looked like she had some eating issues.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
her parents are just like,
you can see
oh,
it.
No,
yeah.
it's not a big deal. Well, you can't not eat food and drink alcohol
right.
all day. I mean, come on.
No.
So it, you know, it's one of those things that I think the people around you definitely shape how you deal with your mental health. And I didn't see them trying to get mental health treatment for her as much as they were like, stop drinking. But
mm-hmm.
the drinking is like as a result of the depression. It's like the depression
yeah.
came first.
Right.
It's not like
right.
she was an alcoholic and then she became depressed. It's like, no,
right.
she's using alcohol to deal with this depression, and it sound like some anxiety because she didn't like to perform in these mega capacities.
Right. She wanted to stick with smaller arenas, but then
Which
when
is
her career
fine.
Grew up, I prefer seeing certain artists in a smaller arena anyway, but like you said, her career, once it blew up, it really blew up, and she was in bigger arenas, which is very anxiety-inducing, I would imagine.
Well, you know what I always think? I love going to concerts, and
mm-hmm.
NDRE has some amazing background singers. So does Erykah Badu.
Okay.
I've just been to some concerts, and I can't remember whose concert it was. Somebody else, a more independent artist, and their background singer, I was like, if they don't take this lead, but you know what? I get why they don't. Because it turns into, you like do
a
you
leap
want
to do what? Be to the front to be
yeah,
an
like
their
you,
own artist?
Do you want to
okay.
do that, or do you just want to be like, I can sing, and
right.
I get to tour, and I get, but you know,
and make
nobody,
money from your singing.
Yeah, nobody's out recognizing me. I'm able to go to Target. I'm
True.
Able to, you know, I think there is some, you know, there's some value. And I mean, even if like, you know, you're up for a promotion at work and you're like, I don't want to do more work.
That
just,
yeah, exactly.
Like, no, mm-hmm. I'll just be a mail clerk. Like, I don't want to manage
yeah.
this place. I don't
yeah.
want those sort of issues. I think is, here's my pack light tip, I guess.
Oh,
I think it's
are we
perfect.
Rolling into it?
I'm rolling right now.
Rolling with my homie.
Yeah. So I think it's perfectly okay to set boundaries with yourself and others around, you know, what you're willing to do. And even in this situation with the show you were talking about, let's go back to that.
Mm-hmm.
You're the worst. I think that she has to set boundaries around how he's able to treat her depression. You know, like,
right.
you can't have these things to make me happy. Like, oh, let's make you happy day. Like, my boundary is when I feel like this, this is the space I need. This is how I need you to act. I think that, you know, a large part of the depression, though, tricks you into believing that you don't have a voice and you really can't say this stuff. And that keeps you depressed. Just by not saying this stuff to people, like, I don't want to perform in an arena. I don't want to go to a haunted house. I don't want to, you know, just like, no.
But like you said, the disappointing part, like not
right.
wanting to disappoint the people you love. So you see that they, you know, they're trying to be happy and live life with you and cheer you up. So
mm-hmm.
you don't want to disappoint them. So
mm-hmm.
you go along with it. I would imagine hoping that maybe this will help.
Mm-hmm.
But if you've been living with clinical depression for a long enough time, you probably know it won't.
Yeah. But if you know that, I think you have to have a way of communicating that to the other people.
Okay.
You know, you have to say, like, look, this is my process when this happens. This is, you know, this is what typically happens. If it gets to this point, this is what you can do. But not necessarily putting them in an enabling role where they're now, their job is to make you happy and keep you out of depression, out of depressed episodes or something. Like, I don't think that's a healthy role to take. And in line with that, I do have a book recommendation for folks who are in relationships with people who have depression. So the book that I found to be the most helpful is When Someone You Love Is Depressed, How to Help Your Loved One Without Losing Yourself. So we'll put that in the show notes. That's a very long title. I wrote it down, and it's three lines.
Yeah, all one title.
All one title. I didn't make that up.
A subtitle, a sub-subtitle.
No. All one title. So I think it's very important that when you're having these relationships with people who are depressed, to make sure you're not losing yourself in their depression, that you have to, you know, have boundaries with yourself of what you will and will not do in an effort to help them be better.
Okay. And my pack light tip, I'm gonna try to go for the person who loves the person with depression. If you're at a certain place where you're going to be in a relationship with that person, like Nedra said, you know it's serious, and someone that you love has told you that they have depression, I would say first educate yourself and do your research. You know, try to work with them and see if you can go with them and talk to their doctor or talk to their psychiatrist, not about them necessarily, but in educating yourself about what depression, what it means, what it looks like specifically for your loved one, how it can be treated, and come to terms with the fact that it's not about you and that you may not be able to just cheer the person up. And it's not, you know, their depression is not a reflection of their feelings about you. Well, it may not be a reflection of their feelings about you in the relationship. I mean, we're talking about clinically depressed, which is a medical diagnosis, not just someone who's sad. Maybe get your own counseling, your own therapy, so that you can understand that it's not about you. And then you guys have relationship counseling to work together on it, if that's what you're committed to doing. All right, guys. So, pack light. So, Nedra, tell everyone out there where they can find you and what you have going on now.
I can be found on Instagram at Kaleidoscope Counseling. I have a group practice in Charlotte, North Carolina. We do some online counseling as well for anybody in North Carolina. I also have my 2019 version of the Empowered Planner. A lot of updates from me will be available on my Instagram. This fall, I have a group coming up for women who are childhood survivors of trauma. I have an event coming up this fall and some other things I can't think of off the top of my head.
Your worksheets?
Right now. Oh, yeah, my worksheets. So on my website, Kaleidoscope Counseling, PLLC.com, I have some great and wonderful worksheets for folks to do on their own or as a supplement to their counseling. I create worksheets every so often just to help people out. I think worksheets and just writing, journaling, have a process for putting things on paper is a very good way to heal and begin your journey of self-care and being a better person. So, yeah, my website, I have some worksheets, and my Instagram, I have all updates on every single thing that I'm doing.
Yes, you do. I have referred people to your website for those worksheets for all the reasons you just said. And so the person went and looked at the website and wanted to print the sheets and did, you know, actually completed them. And was asking me now, how do I send them to her so she can score them?
Like, oh.
No. She's not doing that.
I'm not scoring
She's
them.
She's not scoring them. There's no right or wrong here with the worksheet process. Oh. It's self-reflection,
introspection. She wants me to grade her worksheet.
Yeah, basically, oh. I guess, and tell her, you know, normal or not normal. You know, I don't know what she's looking for. But I said, nope, this is just a time for you to be. Right, and be totally honest. Nobody else has to see it or is going to see it. So be honest and writing it down. And then I am on Instagram and Facebook. I am at KendraT.the.slp. And that's SLP for speech language pathologist, because that's what I do. I have launched my book, my first book. It is a crossword puzzle book. It's entitled Wordplay, Crossword Puzzle Book, 1990s TV show edition. And it's all crossword clues and answers based on the TV show A Different World and 90s hip-hop and R&B and just life situations in general, all things that I enjoy. I love doing crossword puzzles, but I find that they are usually geared towards a very specific audience, but also vague at the same time, but basically not me. So I made the crossword puzzle experience that I would like to do. And it's available now for pre-sale on my website, www.kendratsays.com, because that's what I do. I say it. And the book is coming out September 10th. So right now the pre-sale is on sale. It's a good sale price going on. And our Instagram is
at Packlight Podcast.
It's real. Elevated elegance on another element. And she keep it genuine. Special dedication going out to my...